Hi, I'm Leslie McVane, the host of A Story to Tell, where a program where I interview people about their stories or stories they might have about other people. And today we have such a treat. My guest is Mort Soul, and he's not only going to tell us a little bit about himself, but he's also going to tell us the story of Casey at the Bat. Hi, Mort.
Good morning, Leslie.
How are you?
Well, I'm delighted.
Well, you are quite your family, the Soul family, is like, you know, Hall of Fame in sports for Maine, right?
Maine's Hall of Fame, yeah.
I think your family probably has more people in that Hall of Fame than any other family.
Well, don't exclude the Bowdoin College Athletic Hall of Honor either.
Oh, yeah. Well, we wouldn't want to leave Bowdoin out of it. I'm assuming the big B is
it's for not
Bowdoin.
For Bates, that's for sure.
Although I think your mother went to Bates.
My mother went to Bates, you're right.
So she might think that could go either way.
I bet she is, yeah. She's speaking to us now, I'm sure.
You come from quite the family.
Well,
your dad, your uncle, your brothers.
Grandfather.
Are all sports people.
Yes.
And football in particular for most of them.
Right.
A little track thrown in.
Yes.
And some baseball.
Some baseball, yes.
And now you excelled at baseball during high school.
Uh-huh.
And yes, you did. And football?
Well, I was co-captain at both Deering and Bowdoin.
Uh-huh.
I played both, yeah.
So why both? One was in the fall and
well,
one was in the spring.
Keep in mind, in those days, it was, especially in high school, the one sport athlete was very, very rare. Nowadays, it seems to be the norm. But no, I played football in the fall, and then in the winter, indoor track. And even though you may find it hard to believe, we still have a record at the Portland Expo. And I led off, handed the baton to a fellow named Bill O'Flynn, to Paul Gray, to future U.S. Congressman Tom Allen. And that record was set it would have been 1962. And then a couple of years ago, they moved the meet from there to Gorham. And so the record will be there ad infinitum.
All right, I'm proud
deal.
Of you.
Well, big deal.
So you hurt your shoulder, I think.
The summer before I went to college, yeah.
Yeah, and that was, baseball kind of was like not going to
happen.
Well,
I played my senior year and they put me at first base. And so I was able to come in sidearm, and I did okay that year.
Yeah, all state. Wow. And then at Bowdoin, you played football.
Yes.
And baseball or not?
Yes, yeah. I played baseball my senior year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now
you
ended up doing 2 years on the football team.
Oh, I played for the freshman football team, and 4 years.
Yeah.
In 3 years, sophomore year through my senior year. Football.
And we want to let our audience know that was when Bowdoin really had a football team.
Please.
Well, I shouldn't say that, but they were really good.
Well, without question, I think the greatest victory was against the University of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been in the fall. Oh, goodness. Am I going to get this right? 1961?
No,
1963. 1963, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. 1963, when the Bangor Daily News said Bowdoin should not only not be allowed in the town of Orono and not even on the field with the University of Maine. Well, sophomore Paul Soul, my older brother, put on quite a show that day, and Bowdoin beat Maine 7-0. And the
terrific.
First one in the Bowdoin locker room to congratulate them was University of Maine All New England guard Phil Soul, my oldest brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was nice.
You had people on both sides.
Yeah.
So you did not leave baseball behind when you left college.
Well, I played in the Twilight League, and I played in the over 40 league in Brunswick.
You also coached.
Yes, I did.
For many years.
Yeah, for many years. Yeah.
And now you go to games all the time.
Well, my son is the head coach at Greeley, and he's one of four state championships.
Wow.
Yeah, so I go and yell at the head coach, and whatever I suggest, he does the opposite, and he wins.
And you also go and sit on the bench at Bowdoin whenever they play with some of your teammates from the days when you were at Bowdoin.
Well, sitting back of them, yeah.
Yeah.
not on the bench. Unless you have an alumni game. That was fun.
Yeah, I'll have to go to that. Yeah. Now, you're famous for something else. And I heard this recently, up at Bowdoin, sitting on the bleachers with you. You do a wonderful rendition of Casey at the Bat.
Thank you.
And I'm going to step aside and let you do that for our audience.
Okay, it was difficult to memorize it. Not everybody walks around and says, "Then upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat." It took me several hours to learn that line.
Yeah. But you've done that all over. You did it at Fenway Park before a game.
Yeah, Cooperstown, New York, at the National Baseball Hall of Fame, right over here at Hadlock Field. But usually it's a little league banquet, and they give me a red hot dog and send me home. That's my stipend.
Well, we're not going to give you anything, but we want to hear you say this. So I'm going to step aside, and in a
you're
minute,
you're
going to do your thing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, and welcome to Mudville, a small town, let's say 150 miles northwest of New York City. The day, I remember it well, August 13th, 1888. The citizens of Mudville were very proud of their baseball team, but on this afternoon, the outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with one inning left to play, and when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope that springs eternal from the human breast. They thought, if only Casey could get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a Lulu, and the latter was a cake. So upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little hope of Casey coming to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted and fans saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second, and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled on the dell, it knocked against the mountain and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And while greeting the crowd, he lightly tipped his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt, that's Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded as he wiped them on his shirt. And while the withering pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed from Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. Now the leather-covered spheroid came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. "It ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said.
From the benches black with people, there went up a muffled roar like the beating of a storm wave on some stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone from the stand. It's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand with a smile of Christian charity. Great Casey's visit shown, he stilled the rising tumult. He bid the game go on. He singled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew. Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two!" "Fraud!" cried the maddened thousands, and echo answered, "Fraud!" But one scornful look from Casey and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain, and they knew he would not let that ball go by again. The smile is gone from Casey's lips. He grinds his teeth in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball. And now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere. Somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere people laugh and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Okay, well, this was such a treat to have Mort tell the story of Casey at the bat. Now he's put me at the bat, and we're going to see what happens. But
we're going to see what a real strikeout looks like. Just kidding. She's going to hit the home run. I'm the strikeout here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm better than I look. Anyway, if you have a story to tell, I would love to talk with you, and you can contact me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-E-Y, Mac, at portlandmedia.org. Strike one. No, home run.